Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Welcome to another episode of Talking Eds Season 3 here on Campus FM. This is Milton Resendez Vera with my co-host Salish Rose Corte with the topic of informal learning, activism, and women's rights.
Hello, Milton. It's good to be here as usual doing this with you again. But before we begin, can we talk about what informal learning really is and how it differs from other kinds of learning?
Of course. This is very important because informal learning is actually the kind of learning you get by accident. You didn't really mean to learn it. You might not even know where you picked it up, but it's still there. For example, your first language, you know, your mother tongue, it is learned through informal learning. You picked it up from the people around you, maybe your parents, friends, family, which is different from a second language you might learn in school, right?
Definitely, that's right. When we take classes to learn a language, there's a clear objective in mind, and there's also a structure we follow in order to learn it. This is called formal learning because it has a clear purpose and you get a certificate of completion at the end. Informal learning, on the other hand, doesn't need a specific context to happen. It can happen at anywhere and at any time.
That's right. So it's important to keep in mind this informal learning because it's everywhere and it's easily accessible to everybody. Because, you know, formal learning, schooling is not always accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When we use informal learning through activism, it can have more reach than formal learning. Because, like I said, not everybody can reach formal learning.
Definitely. And that also poses some sort of like a double-edged sword. Now, I say this because even though it can be used as a tool for positive change, and on the other hand, it can also lead to one imbibing like toxic beliefs such as racism, sexism. These can be unconsciously learned, and someone might end up holding these ideas without even realizing it. But with informal learning, we can unlearn these toxic beliefs as well.
That's right. And here is the connection between informal learning and activism. So how do we use informal learning through activism to promote women's rights? Today we will cover this topic with a very special guest all the way from Mexico.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm excited.
I can tell. Now, over the music break, I'd like our listeners to also ponder over this. Are there things that I've learned, as in you've learned without realizing it? Are they positive or negative? And how do they affect you and your interactions with others? Think about that. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Talking Ed Season 3 here on Campus FM. We just had a short musical break to think about the things we've learned without knowing we've actually learned them and how these affect us and our interactions with others. To help us more with this topic, I am excited to introduce a very special guest who joins us via Skype all the way from Mexico. You know, despite the schedule change, despite over there it's the morning, over here it's the afternoon. This is Dr. Maria Jose Garcia Oramas.
Hi, everyone.
Dr. Maria Jose Garcia Oramas is currently the coordinator of the CENDIU, the Center for Human and Integral Development for University Students in the University of Veracruz. Before this, she was the founding coordinator for the gender unit in the University of Veracruz when it was established in 2014. Her professional background includes a bachelor's in social psychology from the Iberoamerican University in the City of Mexico, a master's degree in gender studies from the New School University in New York, USA, and a doctorate in educational sciences from the University of Paris 10 in Nantes, France. How are you, Dr. Oramas?
Fine, thank you. Good morning, I'm here.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us all the way from Mexico. Now, let's get right into our discussion and let's talk about traditional gender roles. What are they and how do we learn them? Also, how is this related to informal learning?
Okay, well, human rights are human rights. So the first thing to say for me is that English is not my maternal language. So please be tolerant to my maybe not very good English. Explain.
No problem.
No, don't worry.
Don't worry about that.
Okay, so the first thing I was saying is that we shouldn't talk about human rights because human rights are for all. So then we should just talk about human rights. Mm. If we talk about women's rights, it's because something has passed that women are not included, let's say, in those human rights. So that we have to highlight that.
Mm. Okay, so human rights and not just women's rights.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Well, the first thing, we should keep saying women's rights unless until the time that we really understand that human rights are for all. So okay. The persons we have to separate. So all people.
All right.
Everyone learns to become human in an informal way, as you were saying, in informal learning, because it's all the time. It's during everyday life, it's during all type of messages that all the people around that the society where we live are just transmitting to the other. Mm. So you become human by a process of informal learning. That's the real thing, because as you were saying, formal learning becomes later. Once you get in school, once you get in, and at that time, you are already are socialized as a human in the environment you are. With your family, with people you have around. So, in terms of women, there's a condition of nascence that makes you different from another kind of humans, which are men. So since the beginning, you were born in a condition that is considered, let's say, devaluated or different, or at least not so important as being a man. So that turns in a position in a social life which is less important. You have this idea that women are human of a second category, let's say, no?
Hmm. All right.
So, since the moment you come to the world as a woman and not as a man, that starts the difference. And that starts where you are where you are socialized as a human being of not, let's say, not so important as of being a man. And that is to say, if I have to choose between sent to school someone or the other, like a boy or a girl, well, I will send the boy to the school. Mm-hmm. If I have to give food to three or four of my children and one is man and the other a woman, I would prefer to raise the man in a better way, let's say, just put some examples. Mm-hmm. So that gets into what you are asking me, what is traditional gender roles. Mm-hmm. That is to say that is in this condition or in this position you are informally trained to perform in life in a different way as you were a man. And then that happens from one generation to the other until it gets to a role. A role is the way you act in life, how you conduct yourself, things you do, etc. Into something that what it gets tradition. Tradition is something that is passed from one generation to the other as considered to become part of a society structure. What I'm saying is that traditions are like the pillars of the social structure. So if you change that, the structure will fall.
Hmm. Oh.
So you have to keep those gender roles in this way so the society can go on in the way everybody, or at least this is what we are taught to, everybody wants it to be. Otherwise it will be chaos, disaster, horrible. So traditional gender roles sustain the way a society wants to hold on or to become. So this is what I consider the way that things are transmitted.
Okay.
So informal learning plays a fundamental role in how the way society transmits and maintains and sustains traditional gender roles. And I don't know whether I answered your question.
You did. You really did answer that question beautifully. Yeah. And just to elaborate a bit more, how do these gender roles influence how women are treated along their lifespan? Specifically, use Mexico as an example.
Well, Mexico. Mexico is a very traditional society. So we're saying that as more as a society is traditional, as more as these roles are kept, no, or sustained. So in Mexico, there is really strong idea that men are more important or more valuable than women. And here it is called, or it is we call as machismo. Mm-hmm. And machismo, mm-hmm. I know there in English you have that word.
Yes.
You
know?
Yes.
Machismo. Well, yeah, I think we basically borrow it from,
yeah.
from
it's
Spanish.
The same. It's very similar.
Well, you borrow it from us.
Yeah.
And you borrow from us because we have a problem here. So we all borrow the problem as well. But it's a very traditional society in which this macho man, there's a son of which macho is this man who is a very strong, very womanizer, very, you know, with this, say, three P's, you know, with the letter P, which is a paternalist.
So he's a provider and a protector
and a father.
So, would you say that this informal learning influences both men and women, or does it influence one more than the other?
No, it influences everyone, yes. Women, men, people with sexual different orientations or identities, diverse identities, it influences everyone. So women are, or people are treated the way the society believes or understands that a gender should behave. So there's a process. You also talked about an unconscious way of transmitting. Well, that might be an unconscious way of transmitting, but for at least for the leaders of the community or for the leaders of the family or for the ones who want to sustain the society, let's say, this is very conscious. This is transmitted in a way that nobody could, you know, let's say, what I'm saying is that, for example, if you think in Foucault, there's a micro power transmitted in a micro sense. That is, we always think that power or gender roles or whatever the society wants to transmit to others is done in a macro way, but it's done in a very, very micro sense, in every single day, in every single word, in everything act, in everyday life. And it happens in a way that it becomes normal, it becomes natural, and it becomes, let's say, preferable, I don't know how to say, mm-hmm. that an expectation for the others, from you.
Mm. All right.
So, the way women are treated, are trust, are by these ways, become in the way that women at the end understand her own identity. So your identity is at the end what it was expected from you, what it was taught to you, what it's in your cultural belief. So you were talking about Mexico. So in Mexico, women really believe that their role is to be at home, to stay with their children, to be with their husbands, to get married, and to sustain this traditional role. So they learn the little girls to stay at home, to clean the house, not to be very serious in trying to study, because at the end that won't help anything in family life. And on the other side, they teach men to be strong, to have many women, to go outside the house, to be free, to do as they want, and so on and so forth.
All right, so this is kind of like the dark side of informal learning. Let's talk.
Yeah, it is.
It kind of is. So you were the coordinator of the University of Veracruz's Coordinating Gender Unit, which was created in very recently, 2014. What were your motivations for taking this place, and what were some of the challenges you faced?
Well, Okay, so let's talk about the light, the nice part of it.
The good part of it.
The good part of it, right.
Good news first.
If these things happen without notice, we want it to happen differently. That's what you said about unlearned. So the process in learning to be a woman and to have defend women's rights is a process of unlearning what is being learned to transform learned in a different way. So I think that we have enormous positive ideas in this kind of informal learning. Now, before I talk about the University of Veracruz, I would say that I studied in the USA and I learned from these women's movements that I considered were great, and I tried to put that into our practice, which is the consciousness raising groups. I don't know where you know that, but in the US, in the 60s, the women just, unfortunately, and in a very conscious way, they just joined around in their houses, in their communities, in their places, to talk about them, to talk about what was their experiences, what they should do to transform. And that is called consciousness raising groups. And I think that this consciousness raising is the most important thing in informal learning and to promote women's rights. And how we did do that? We tried to create these kind of groups in the university with everyone, women, men, students, professors, administrative staff, and to join them in these kind of groups to get to understand what was the meaning of being a woman in the university, how to promote women's rights, what was happening, what happens in terms of violence against women, and we started from that point.
All right. What were some of the results of these campaigns, these movements?
Well, we started with some that is called up. I have to say some other thing about Latin America. There is a very, very important current here, which is popular learning, which comes from Brazil. It's the idea that learning has to be used for transformation, and that has to be used from this point, Paulo Freire.
Oh, there you go, Paulo Freire. We were learning a lot about him.
Well, we should, because he was very, very important in this idea that is here. It's called popular learning, and what it says, what it means, is that he thought that you shouldn't teach something which is not important for the other. Let's say that it has to come from the other's reality, what is needed, what he needs for his everyday life. And he had a very nice method to educate people, to educate adults. And I learned that when I was very young in Mexico City, and I worked with adults in this kind of method to get them to have a primary license, or I would say that the primary diploma. Mm. So I learned from that if people do not consider what they are learning as important to their own life, everyday life, that learning will not have a meaning in their own lives. So in the university, we use popular education in many ways. But we use it, for example, in this other strategy that is called World Café. You may remember that. So the World Café is a way to get people in different small groups to think or to reflect on some issue. In this case, the issue was violence against women. Uh-huh. So with these groups, starting with their ideas, starting with things they consider to be important, is how we started then to do some campaigns, to do some courses, training groups, and all those kinds of informal learning.
All right. So, yeah, I do remember the World Café. I was actually...
You have talked about it in several times.
I've talked about it pretty often.
It was very, very successful.
Mm. Oh, good. Yeah, good then. All right. So, Dr. Adamas, now, what do you think, with an informal learning environment, what do you think could be some of the disadvantages that may pop up?
Well, the disadvantages is that it is not as easy as formal learning. Let's say, for example, if you have a formal course, you have 50 people, more or less, or 60, I don't know how many classes you have there. They're sitting in the same place, they are expecting the same thing, they are doing that because it's important for them, and there's no other, I mean, it's easy in that way. So, informal learning, for me, the first disadvantage is that it's very difficult. It means more time, more thinking, more promotion, more participation, and sometimes it's not, and that makes it difficult. For example, it takes much more time to do it. It's voluntary most of the time. So for us, it turns out to be a process. You have to understand it as a very long-term process, which is difficult to evaluate. I think evaluation is another disadvantage of informal learning. It's not very easy to evaluate its results. It's not as easy as formal learning. So it's a very different way of thinking. So you have to be, to understand very, very well what you're doing, what are your goals, and how will you turn to get them. For example, after the World Cafe, it took us many time to start with this campaign based on what everyone was said, and also because you have communities in movement. Like, as I'm saying, you have a class, you know that these people will be there, like, no, 6 months or months of the time, or together, or thinking at the same time. But in informal learning, you don't know where it's in front of you. There's a very change or rotation in the people you're working with, in the people that are receive information. So you have to be very, very creative, I would say.
All right. What are some of the advantages that informal learning has that formal learning does not have?
I think the impact on people. That is the most important advantage, that it really changes lives. It really changes conscious. I mean, it really gets into this process of consciousness creation, but that to me is most important. So what I would say that it's the most important advantage is that what you get to do will have a really very impact in the people who are a part of this process. And I see that very often. Let's say you at the end you leave an imprint, and that will stay.
All right.
And that will stay in the ways you never imagine it will. Like, for example, I'm here talking with a student who is in Malta, who was with me.
Yeah.
I would never imagine that someday he will be in Malta.
I didn't say this before, but Oramas to me is like a mentor. Like in 2014, I was working with her and with the entire coordinating gender unit team, and it was, I mean, like she says, the informal learning that we had there was very impactful, and I'm all the way over here in Malta now, trying to spread the word.
Definitely. Now, you've talked about what went on in Rivedecluse University. Now, if another university, let's say University of Malta, wanted to reach similar successes for women's rights through informal education or informal learning, what factors would you advise they consider?
So, first of all, to start from their own needs. The needs of the people they're working with. That's another thing that I think is very, very important in informal learning, which is different from formal learning. That the issues, the ways, the processes are done by the people who are involved in them. So it's participating action. And my first suggestion would be there, that just start from what you have, from where you are, from the people you're working with. Listening, it's another very important difference. And the position of the teacher, you didn't ask me that in your question, but I think it's very, very important. The position of the one who is promoting this process, it's a very different position from the formal learning professor. Let's say he's not the one who knows everything, he's not the one who knows where is the result and what is going to happen, but someone who's open to listen, to understand, and to start a process. that hopefully will be good for everyone. So that's the first thing. So the second thing is that at some point we thought that the way to translate all this experiences, because if you do formal learning, there's a very usual way to transmit. Let's say you just write an article, or you just go and do a course, and you just go on to another place in the world, and you just say what you did, and the others just hear and try to do it the same. But in formal learning, I think it's not the way we should think about how to do it in different places.
Right.
That happens, for example, in the funding. When we had funding to the things, the first thing who was expected from funders was the possibility to replicate the experiences. And at this point in life, I don't think you can replicate. What you can do is to get some of the fundamental points of this type of learning. I'm not saying you should not write, I'm not saying you should not do articles, I'm not saying that. So that is very important, and it is crucial and essential because it's a way to translate and the only things. But nonetheless, those things will not have the impact they should have if you are not raised in the roots of the community you are in. I don't know whether I'm clear.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Oramas. That's all the time we have for today. I'm very happy that we were able to have this experience. So a big thank you to you and to Campus FM for making this possible.
Thank you to you all, and I congratulate you for this kind of programs, and I hope you are very successful in the next ones.
All right.
Thank you.
Me too. Okay, so thank you for joining us, listeners. This has been Milton Resendiz Vera with my co-host,
Solis Rose Corte,
on Talking Eds Season 3, Campus FM, brought to you by the third IMAS cohort. If you are interested in the International Master's Degree to Adult Education, please visit www.gla.ac.uk. There you can check the requirements and more information regarding our program. To follow the journey of the third cohort, visit our blog at imask-unmasked.squarespace.com. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye.